The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WISO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Bruce Campbell. Hello, Bruce.
What the heck is going on?
Bruce, I think I might have seen you in a movie. Didn't you make a movie one time?
No, I'm a librarian by trade.
I see
you're mistaken.
Okay. Well, I see you finally put out another book, man. Why'd it take you so long?
We got to wait for stuff to happen, right?
Okay.
If you're talking about yourself, you got to build up a repertoire of ridiculousness. And I think our reservoir had filled back up. It was time to share the behind the scenes from the blue collar side of Hollywood.
How long has it been since you put out If Chins Could Kill?
15 years.
Okay. Well, now we finally got the sequel.
Yeah, exactly. And by the by, this is part of a three-part journey. This is a trilogy.
Uh-huh.
15 years from now, I'm going to do the final Confessions.
Nice.
So well, this is a well-thought-out George Lucas-type trilogy.
Well, this new book is called Hail to the Chin, Further Confessions of a B-Movie Actor. And as we're recording this right now, isn't today your official publication day?
It is. It drops, as they say in the business.
Okay. Now, I think a lot of our listeners probably actually know who you are, Bruce. What do I call you? Are you a movie star? What would you call your occupation?
I'm a thespian by trade.
A thespian?
Okay. A thespian.
Okay.
And I'm a member, a proud member of the Elks Club, I'll have you know, because the Elks was formed initially as an actors' after-hours drinking club.
Oh.
Because in New York City and other cities, they had blue laws, like you had to shut down at a certain point in the night. Actors would perform until late at night. They had nowhere to go afterward. But if you formed a private club, you could stay open. So I joined my local Elks on behalf of and when I joined them, I informed them that they needed me. They needed me in their organization. I'm part of the roots of their organization.
Hmm. Well, I understand that you're embarking on a mammoth book tour, like 3 months long.
About 35 cities.
That's mammoth.
I did 55 for the first book.
Where are you right now?
I'm in New York City in the beautiful Flatiron Building, the iconic Flatiron Building.
Oh, you're at your publisher's.
Yes, exactly.
St. Martin's Press.
We're starting the tour in New York, and we're going to Long Island tonight.
All right. Well, I know you're coming through our area, and we'll give our listeners your itinerary as we get a little further in here. Now, reading your book, I understand that you went to high school with a guy. You've known a guy for a long time that I have to think maybe has a lot to do with the fact that you ended up in this line of work.
Yeah, we sort of found each other. By the time I met Sam Raimi in high school, technically, I mean, I knew I wanted to be an actor. So that I did when I was about 8. I figured that part out. But Sam turned out to be a great, you know, comrade in the interest in doing something in the entertainment business. I dropped typing class and wound up in radio speech because we both like radio and sound and everything. And that's where we would start doing the morning announcements on Friday. We did a recurring series, The Adventures of Captain Nemo. So it was a great start, and we both we're like, okay, maybe we can do this. So we decided to give it a shot.
And all these years later, both of you are still in the biz.
We're still standing, yeah. And I'm back playing Ash again after the last time I played it was 25 years ago. The first time I played it was 38 years ago. So no one can say I've squandered my career.
Tell us about that first movie, the one that turn into a hit for you guys.
Evil Dead. It was a humble little horror movie made for about $375,000. And we couldn't get arrested in the U.S. We sold it overseas, became a big hit in the UK, and became their number one video in 1983. Then we got New Line Cinema here in the States to distribute it, and it sort of went from there.
Bruce Campbell joins us. His book is Hail to the Chin, Further Confessions of a B-Movie Actor. In your book, you note that B-movies, the A-list movies are now conceptually becoming more like B-movies. Explain what you mean.
If you dress up like a bat and fly around a city called Gotham and drive a weird souped-up car, trust me, that's a B-movie. If you are bitten by a radioactive spider, that's not only a B-movie, that's a 1950s B-movie. So I'm very glad to see that I've been vindicated. What I've been saying all along is that B-movies are not bad. B-movies are more interesting. B-movies can do more crazy, ridiculous, over-the-top stories. Finally, they've come around. And the Marvel Universe is a pretty good example of how sort of B-movies are taking over the world. Because, look, all the executives now are 22 years old. So they're making what they like to watch.
Well, Bruce, I got to give it to you. You're certainly a hardworking guy.
Well, it's a business that if you don't, the sands of time will wash over you. You know, I like working. I like every aspect of the entertainment industry. And it's very gratifying to be able to kind of pay your electric bill after being in this for a while.
Yeah. Bruce Campbell joins us. What was it like to work with somebody like Burt Reynolds?
Burt's awesome. He's as awesome as you could imagine. Just a really, you know, Burt went through a really interesting time period. And I encouraged him to write a book, and thankfully one came out, I think, a couple years ago, that he went from the end of the studio system, got into very early television, worked his way through to be a tabloid darling, became the number one box office star for like 3 years in a row, which is fairly unprecedented, and then lost it all. So it's just, what a story. Guy did his own stunts, old school. He's all broken to pieces, but, you know, still one of the funniest guys I've met. And it was really a pleasure to work with him on Burn Notice. Even if it was for one episode, we could go, yeah, Mr. Burt came through.
Well, back when I was in high school, I used to go to some wild parties, and to entertain my friends, I used to do something that I called backward movies, where I would like try to run up the stairs backwards like I was rewinding the film. And I was astonished to discover that you use that same kind of technique in the Evil Dead series. So tell us about that.
Well, Sam loves doing crazy visuals, and sometimes the only way you can make something actually work is to do it backwards, do it in reverse. You know, my girlfriend's tongue was supposed to fly out of her head, her severed head, and stick into my mouth.
Yeah.
So it made more sense at the time to stick the tongue in my mouth already, pull it out. But then what happens is you have to start at the height of your reacting pain, shock, and surprise. Then when the thing is pulled out, you have to reverse and go to shock and surprise, and then start and then take that down and end the shot looking quizzically. So it's actually a strange skill that probably four actors have had to do, and I'm one of them.
It sounds like
Sam has the audacity to say he would watch the dailies, and at one point he shouted out, "That's the worst reverse motion acting I've ever seen." I'm like, "Have you seen any good reverse motion acting?" So it's like, Sam, you were there on the set. You printed that take, pal. Live with it. So that's what reverse motion acting is.
I mentioned to a guy this morning that I was going to be talking to you, Bruce, and he goes, "Oh, man," he says, "Army of Darkness is my grandma's favorite movie."
My grandma's favorite movie. That's good.
Well, this guy's
but
young.
We wanted to make a movie that was like The Vikings.
Yeah.
The Vikings was one of my favorite movies as a kid, and Sam Raimi loved it too. So it's our low-budget tribute to The Vikings.
Well, his grandma's probably about 40, so don't worry about it.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Now, Bruce, wasn't that one of the ones where you used the reverse acting, that movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
I had to playing forward, it's a little tiny version of Ash. It's a teeny Ash. I'll spare you the story details. He's running away, gets to a wall, realizes he's trapped, turns around, looks, sees a giant fork coming at him, gets impaled by the fork, and slowly dies. So backwards, you have to go from dead to coming back to life, to reaching the maximum amount of pain, to then, as the fork is pulled away from you, again, it's the same thing. So your performance is deaccelerating the entire time. It's very weird.
Mm. Bruce Campbell joins us. He's just starting his epic book tour, and he's going to be sweeping through our region. And he's got a number of appearances in our area. He'll be in Louisville on August 21st. It's a Monday. These are all evening book signing events at Carmichael's in Louisville. And then a couple days later, Wednesday, the 23rd of August, he'll be at Joseph Beth Booksellers at the Rookwood Pavilion in Cincinnati. And then he's going to keep on heading into Central Ohio. He's going to be at the Book Loft in Columbus on Saturday, August 26th. And then he's headed north to Cleveland. He'll be in Westlake at the Barnes & Noble on Monday, the 28th of August. I don't think we have too many listeners in Cleveland, but
I'm getting tired just listening to that.
Man, I'm getting tired just thinking about you being out there. What's it like meeting your fans out there like that? What's it feel?
It's like speedballing.
Yeah.
Sort of heroin and cocaine at the same time. Because, you know, you're lifted up by their enthusiasm, their excitement. You know, some people are jumping up and down. And yet, you know, you got to be there for 4 hours signing everything imaginable. So it can be a challenge if you have a bigger turnout, but it's also very gratifying. So it's challengifying.
One time I was in Chicago, and I was kind of helping out with a book signing that Gene Hackman was doing, and all these people kept coming up to him with all these photos and stuff, and you could tell that these were eBay guys or something, and they were going to turn around and flip these on eBay, and he was totally cool with it. He was letting them bring all these piles of stuff up there, and he was signing everything. Do they do that to you?
We have some rules, you know. If a guy puts 12 books in front of me, I know he's going to pretty much sell those, but I don't care.
Uh-huh.
Because he bought a book. He bought 12 books.
Uh-huh.
What do I care? The thing we are more careful on is merchandising, because I tell folks, if you buy a book, I'll sign one extra piece, a poster, photo, a figurine, whatever you want. But you can't, even if you buy 12 books, you get one item. So we're trying to limit that, because it would no longer be a book signing. It would be a convention appearance.
Right.
So we're trying to channel them into being fairly well-behaved, but we will give them one item.
Well, speaking of conventions, you've done a few of those, haven't you?
I have. 88 was my first convention. And they've morphed. They used to go, they were more like people that your father used to watch on television. It was people who hadn't worked in a while. And now the conventions are not only gigantic, it's every actor in every major movie now are going to these conventions. Hit TV shows, the actors that are on air right now are going. So it's a better mix, better for fans to see guys who are on the air right now. It's more exciting.
Well, speaking of movies, or I should say TV shows that our fathers would have watched, I can remember my dad calling me into the TV den one time and saying, now, you listen to this crappy rock music. He said, now, let's listen to a real guitar player. And, of course, he called me in there, and the Lawrence Welk show was on, and the guy was playing a guitar solo. I understand you're a big fan.
I love Lawrence Welk in so many ways. It's my meatloaf sandwich. It takes me to my happy place, where all the routines are actually really well rehearsed. They make an enormous amount of costumes every week, because the whole orchestra will be in a flaming pink outfit, or purple this, or, you know, checked this. Oh, the styles of that show. A historian will go back through there, and they'll look at the hairstyles, because the show was on for like 30 years. And I watch it because it's pretty kitschy and incredibly hokey. And that's what makes me laugh. So, yeah, I've taped them. I've got about 40 of them on tape.
I went to high school with a girl whose uncle was Myron Florin. And I remember being at my—
Myron Florin, the happy Swede.
Yep. I remember being.
I know his nickname.
I was at this friend of mine's house, and he was the next door neighbor to this girl, and we looked out and we saw Myron Florin in the driveway getting out of his car, and we were fanboys at that point.
That's pretty cool, Myron Florin, the Happy Swede. The guy lives until he's like 85.
I think so. Well, Bruce, when you're out there on the road like this, how do you keep from getting writer's cramp?
You don't. There's always a point, if I hit anything over about 500 books, the signature just goes, and I'll never get it back.
Yeah.
It's like a car that throws a tie rod.
Uh-huh.
It'll start going, the wheel will start going wobbly on you, and you have to slow it all the way down to a crawl, and then you can start again. So sometimes I'll get a bad tie rod.
Hmm. You're originally from Michigan, right?
Yes, sir.
Tell us about what it was like growing up. I'm assuming you grew up in the 60s.
Yeah, I was born in 58, the year of the Edsel, suburban Detroit. Most actors had a crappy childhood. I'm not one of them. My parents, they didn't beat me or mistreat me. But my parents were the first investor in Evil Dead. My father was an amateur actor. We lived in a great suburb, suburban Detroit, where there were no fences or motion detectors, and the big bad dog at those days, it was a German Shepherd. We had one German Shepherd in the neighborhood. We walked everywhere. We cut through every backyard. We jumped on every neighbor's trampoline. There was no safety nets. Ralph Nader had not ruined all the fun in the world yet. We would toboggan in the winter. My mom would hook up the toboggan to the back of the station wagon on these icy roads and take us around the block. And we had signals worked out. Thumbs up was go faster. And we never went thumbs down. We only wanted to go faster. And she'd wipe us out. She'd hit a ridge or something, and we're just off that toboggan. We almost wiped out mailboxes. I mean, that's my mother.
Wow.
So it was good. We were what I call free-range kids. We had a bell, an actual ding-dong bell in a belfry on the top of the house. And the rule was you have to stay within the bell sound distance. That was it. That was our force field. And we'd be playing softball. We'd wait a minute. You'd hear the bell, get on the bikes, ride home. But we could stay anywhere within that range.
You pay tribute to your mom in the back of the book. And
yeah,
I'll see your dad. And then a woman named Lulu. Tell us about her.
That's Sam Raimi's mother. The incredible woman. She would lecture us horribly. And, you know, they were dubious about Sam getting into the movie business. You know, they were retailers. They had Sam's father had a very successful appliance store, a series of stores in downtown Detroit. But they weren't really into it that much. But Lulu would give us a lot of sage advice. And, you know, she could be kind of cruel in her own way. But then she'd give us a check for $5,000 because we came to her begging for, you know, interim financing to get us to some next place. And she'd look at us and she'd go, I don't know which one of you is the stupidest, you or you or you. And, you know, she would drop us off in Sam's family Delta 88 to go see Clockwork Orange.
Uh-huh.
She had no idea what the movie was, and we didn't really either. We'd come out shell-shocked, and she'd go, how is the movie, boys? And she said to me at one point when I was going to get married the first time, and it was going to be a private ceremony. I only wanted, like, a best man, and that was the way my wife and I wanted it. She comes up to me. She goes, if you don't invite me to the wedding, I'm never speaking to you again. And she meant it. So she was at the wedding. She was a ring bearer. And she was just very influential because she was really incredibly loving when she wasn't being a horrible shrew. And she was like a second mother because I went over there to eat dinner all the time and take Sam's younger brother Ted to cello lessons. So became a second family.
Well, you just brought back a memory for me of seeing Clockwork Orange when it came out in the movie theater and just what an amazing experience that was to see that film.
Disturbing as hell.
Do you remember some films from your childhood where you went and you just went, wow, that's unbelievable? For me, it was Ben-Hur.
Oh, Swiss Family Robinson as a kid. you know, the early Disney live action, Son of Flubber. Those were my movies.
Was that with Dick Van Dyke?
No, probably Kurt Russell.
Okay.
Or Dean Jones.
All right. Well, Bruce, we've had a few movie stars on the show over the years. We had Peter Ustinov on for a novel he wrote. Janet Leigh was on for a book she wrote about the making of
I got to give her an award, and I got to imitate Kirk Douglas for her. That was fun.
Nice. Well, she was talking about how Alfred Hitchcock made Psycho in that interview. And then we also had Charlton Heston on for a memoir. Now, are you noticing anything about these names?
Chuck Heston. Yeah, they're all a movie.
They're all dead.
They're all dead. Okay.
Yeah.
I ain't dead yet.
I've got bad luck with actors. Real bad luck.
Okay, well, I'll
Bruce.
Never talk to you again.
I'm just kidding you, Bruce. You're a B-movie guy, man. You're safe, right?
That's right.
Well, Charlton Heston.
There is no fall. There is no fall for a B-movie actor. They've already fallen.
Well, you know, I know that you've got a lot of fans out there. I remember seeing you in Xena.
Yeah, one of my first of four TV shows that I've done down in New Zealand. The current one I'm doing is Ash vs. Evil Dead. We just finished our third season down there in Auckland, and we're waiting for an air date.
I bet you that's a nice place to work. I bet it's a lot nicer than Bulgaria.
Yeah, Bulgaria, for all their foibles, they're emerging from communism, so they got a little more to go. They're part of the EU now, so it's probably better than 10 years ago when I was there. Auckland is just it's a very high quality of life place. And the crew members there, they can actually say no to overtime.
Nice.
They do it all the time. They go, nah, we're good. Thanks. We want to go home and work on our boat. So they're very practical, hardworking people. Because here's the truth. 12 hours is long enough for anybody. That's 4 hours longer than the average schmo. Why do you got to work 16 hours? That's ridiculous.
Yeah. But in America,
it means
they...
you don't know what you're doing. You know, young filmmakers love to say, oh, we work 20-hour days. I'm like, then you're a moron. You don't know what's happening. You know, you don't know what you're doing.
Hmm. But in the U.S., they do that?
Yes, they inform you that you're doing overtime.
I see.
And so Burn Notice had, when I did seven seasons of that, we had what we called a rolling call time. If you shoot 16 hours, well, let's say 14. If you shoot 14 hours, they have to move our call time an extra hour every day in order to not get what they call a forced call and pay penalties to the unions. So Monday morning call is 7 a.m., Tuesday is 8, Wednesday is 9, Friday is 11, and then you know you're going to be working till 1 o'clock in the morning. So we had what we called fratter days, and you couldn't do anything about it. The producers were happy to pay you, but you couldn't say no because they're like, we're doing overtime. That's all there is to it. So I love working in New Zealand. It's way more sane. It's way more normal. These are all family people who are working on this show. They just want to go home.
I hear it's also beautiful.
It is beautiful. I don't get to see much of it because we're based in Auckland, and whenever the shoot is over, I got to get home.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, beautiful country. Beautiful country.
Bruce Campbell joins us. His new book is Hail to the Chin, Further Confessions of a B-Movie Actor, and you can meet him. He'll be coming through our area. He'll be at Carmichael's in Louisville on Monday night on the 21st of August in the evening. He'll also be at Joseph Beth in Lexington as he sweeps through Kentucky, and that is on Wednesday the 23rd. Then he's coming into Southwest Ohio. He'll be at Joseph Beth Booksellers at the Rookwood Pavilion in Cincinnati at 2692 Madison Road, and that's 7 o'clock on Friday, August 25th. And then he's hitting Columbus. He'll be there Saturday, August 26th at 6 o'clock at the Book Loft on 3rd Street in Columbus, and then he's heading up to Cleveland. This is just an amazing tour. You must have some phenomenal stamina.
I enjoy it. If I didn't enjoy it, it would be difficult. But I tend to enjoy it because it's always great to go back to certain towns. You go, oh, yeah, I like this town. Or, certain towns just have, like, really friendly people, like Madison, Wisconsin, or, you know, certain towns people love to laugh. And there's other towns that are just full of stiffs, but that's okay, too.
Well, I see.
Let me get out and see America. There's so many parts to it. And no matter how many cities you go to, someone will always tweet on Twitter, oh, you can't make it over to Decatur? Oh, come on. Mm. So you can never win.
What do you have, about 500,000 Twitter followers?
Yeah, 400 some odd thousand lost souls.
Well, Bruce, you've had...
I got detoured and found my place.
Yeah. Well, you've had this long, fun, successful career. Looking back, what's the best thing that's ever happened to you?
Doing what I wanted to do. I think there's too many people who don't do what they want to do. They have jobs that they don't know how they wound up there. They don't know how to get out of it. So my feeling is do what you would do for free, and the money will follow. So I'm grateful to be able to do that because there's a lot of people who don't do what they want to do. They do what they feel like they have to do.
And you've also been able to get into the other side of the camera, haven't you?
Yeah, I like playing both sides against the middle. You know, from Detroit, we had job rotation because of the car industry. You'd work on fenders on Fridays, then you go to wheels, then you'd put hoods on. So I like the same thing in the entertainment industry. Do a little this, do a little that. It mixes it up.
Well, I got to give it to you. In 15 years, I'll be looking for that next book.
It's coming. And hopefully some others because, you know, after Ash vs. Evil Dead, my obligations are done to that. It's an open field, and I would like to actually write more books. It's a very pleasant experience.
Now, I understand you also wrote a novel called Make Love the Bruce Campbell Way. I have not read that.
That's true.
What's that about?
It's a fictitious story of what would happen if Bruce Campbell, a B-movie actor, actually wound up in an A-movie directed by Mike Nichols, starring Renee Zellweger and Richard Gere, called Let's Make Love. And it all goes to hell in a handcart. I basically am sort of blamed for ruining this big production. And so I have to clear my name and dress up in a disguise and sneak into the Paramount lot and clear my name. It's a completely convoluted, ridiculous story. It's a what-if story. And I think I made the most expensive audiobook version of that ever made in the history of audiobooks. It's a $60,000 audiobook.
Why was it so pricey?
The advance that the company gave me, and I hired actors to play all the roles.
Oh.
So it's like a movie without the picture, sound effects and everything. And it's a pretty fun six-hour achievement, but, you know, four people listened to it. It came out as a comedy album instead of an audio book, so I'm trying to rectify that.
Do you have some of the same actors you named in it? Like Renee Zellweger?
I mean, I got a no, I did not get – no. I hired actors to play Elizabeth Taylor or to play Renee Zellweger or to play Richard Gere.
Oh.
It's all bogus.
Gotcha. Well, it sounds like fun, even if it was pricey and it didn't, you know, recoup the loss of the – what can you say? You tried, right?
We sure as heck tried. I'm going to buy it back.
Well, Bruce, it's really been a treat having you on the show.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Appreciate the time.
Thank you so
much.
And I have
an old-fashioned website, www.bruce-campbell.com. Go there. It'll lay everything out with links to every city.
Gotcha, Bruce. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, my friend. Have a fine afternoon.
Thanks. You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.